let me get set up in a second here. This is my favorite Bible. It's a journaling Bible, but it's a little awkward to speak from. So, well, thank you so much for inviting me here, Betsy, to share my story. And I am going to share my story tonight. And but before I do that, before I share my story, I want you to think about yours. I want you to think about maybe a time in your life when God didn't seem big enough. Your problems just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And God kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And all you could do was see the problems. Because sometimes when you're standing at a crossroad, that's all you can see. Maybe as the problems get bigger and bigger and bigger and God gets smaller, then all of a sudden God doesn't look so good anymore. Like you're struggling with, is God still good? Like you're asking yourself that question. And you don't know what the answer is because your circumstances are so bad. Maybe you've been there. Or maybe you're standing there right now and you are looking into your future that looks so uncertain, so hard. And you're asking yourself, is God still in control? Like, if this is really happening to me, is God really in control? How did I get here? So as I tell you my story tonight, I want you to think about yours, okay? Because this is not about me tonight. This is about what God does as we stand at a crossroad, as we stand at a place in life where going forward is so hard. But it's those places that God reveals to us what we really believe about God so we know how to move forward. So my crossroad journey that I'm going to talk about tonight started with an unplanned and unexpected pregnancy. Not before I was married. No, I already had 4 kids, married to a man who I'd been married to for a long time. But we were done having children. At least that was our plan. We thought we were done. And in the summer of 2014, God had a whole new journey for us to begin. I found out I was unexpectedly pregnant with our 5th child, and it was not in my plans to have another child. And so after we finally started to come to terms with the reality of we're going to have another baby, we began to get excited about that opportunity, about everything that it means to have a baby, bring another life into this world, and learn to love that child. And we began to get excited about what it meant to have another baby. In the middle of this unexpected pregnancy, God also had another beginning for us. We had been ministering at a church in Kentwood for 11 years, and we loved it in Kentwood. It was a great church. But God started us on a journey here to First Baptist Church in Allegan. We began the interview process. Some of you were involved in that. And I was pregnant, and kind of, it was a hard time in life anyway, and the whole interview process was complicated and involved, and but we began that journey, and we knew that God was leading us here. We knew it, and when Nate accepted the position here in November of 2014, we were excited about coming here, and so we did. We packed up our house. My mom helped me pack our house up on Christmas Day of that year. And I remember, I'm like, the boys are going to have Christmas this year. We are not going to not let them have Christmas. And so we left the tree up. So the tree is there, all the presents are under the tree, and everything else is in boxes. Like, it's a mess, you know. If you've ever moved, you know what this is like. And but I promised my kids they were going to have Christmas, and so they did. And we immediately opened the last present and then started packing everything away so we can move it. And we moved 2 days later. We moved on December 27th. Nate preached his last sermon at our old church on December 28th, and he started his new job here on December 29th. I was 8.5 months pregnant. It was a hard move. It was a hard, hard move. My boys, we packed everything, moved everything. Everything is new. New church, new house, new school. Everything is new. And I was stressed out. On the list of top stressors in your life, there's like 30 of them. I think we had, at that point, 15 going on. 15 high-stress events in our life. And honestly, life hadn't even gotten stressful yet at that point. I didn't know it yet. I thought it was. So January 20th of 2015 began like every other day of my life. I woke up. I got the boys ready for school. I packed them up. I dropped them off. I went grocery shopping. And all morning long, I was thinking, something's not right. I don't feel right. And I remember thinking, I haven't felt the baby move like he should. And I kind of brushed it off for a little while, and then finally I got home from grocery shopping, and I said, okay, I'm going to just call my midwife and see what she says. And so I did, and she said, why don't you just come in, and we'll just listen for the baby's heartbeat, and we'll make sure everything's okay. And so I said, okay, and it was a terribly snowy day. I don't know if you remember that winter, but it snowed, I think, every day that winter, literally, I think. It was a horrible winter. That day it was terribly snowy, and so my sister-in-law, Nate's sister, Virginia, came and picked me up. She drove me all the way into Grand Rapids. We got to the birthing center. My midwife sat me down. She laid me down on the couch. And we heard a heartbeat that morning. I thought everything was fine. I went home that night. And I did everything normal. I went to parent-teacher conferences. I made dinner for my kids. I sat at the table, and all of a sudden, I knew that labor was starting. I knew it was really the real thing this time. And we were so excited to meet this baby who we didn't plan on, but God had given us. I had been calling this child God's baby all along because it was not my plan. He was God's plan. And so we called my parents. They came. They're going to stay the night with the boys. We went to the birth suite so that we could meet this new baby. We got there, and I went in. I remember kind of joking around with the ladies and got up to the room and changed, and got the little Doppler radar out and tried to find the heartbeat, and they're having a hard time and, you know, can't find the heartbeat, and I start to get a little nervous, and as things progress, I see that they're starting to get very nervous, and then they call in another midwife, and midwife comes in, and she brings a portable ultrasound machine, thank you, a portable ultrasound machine, and they still can't find the heartbeat, and I'm starting to panic at this time, and then finally they decide it's time, we need to just go to the hospital, because this is more than they can handle at the birth suite. So we get in the van, and we drive to the hospital, and as we get there, they rush us into triage. We're in there, they're looking for the heartbeat, they're not finding anything. The room is quiet because they're listening. It's completely silent. And into that silence, my son, Justice, is born. Into utter, complete, and horrible silence that seemed to last an eternity. Until it was shattered by the sound of my husband falling to the floor and crying out to God. Because we were standing at a crossroads where we had to decide, what do we believe about God? Is God big enough? Can God handle this? Even this? Is God still good? Because my circumstances were so bad, how could God still be good if babies die? And really, God, if this is how you control things, I don't want this. This is the last place I want to be standing right now. So these are questions that as I face my crossroad, I had to figure out if I really believe these things to be true about God. And so, again, remember, as I continue, just think about your own story as well. I'm going to share a story from the Bible. Now, I'm going to call it a story because I grew up in Sunday school, and to me, this story is actually flannel graph. So in behind me as I talk about this story, think about the flannel graph that you remember your Sunday school teachers putting up on the board. Maybe some of you still have flannel graph at home. I don't know. But I'm going to talk about the children of Israel tonight. And the children of Israel were standing at the brink of the promised land. Like, they are right there ready to walk in. It's one step further. Cross the Jordan River, and they are in the promised land. That's all they have to do. So you know this story. It's a story about the 12 spies. And as they are preparing to go into the promised land, the children of Israel send these spies into the promised land to spy it out and see what it's all about. So I'm going to be reading from Numbers, the end of Numbers 13 and part of Numbers 14 as I start today. So we're going to talk about the 12 spies of Israel. So at the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. It was a huge bunch of grapes that they are carrying. So this is a good, fruitful land. And they told him, "We came to the land which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. However, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land, and the Negeb, the Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country, and the Canaanites dwell in the sea and along the Jordan." They don't see God here. What they see are their problems. Their problems are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And let me just keep reading because it gets worse. "But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it.'" One voice of reason in this voice of discontent and fear. "Then the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are.' So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim, and we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seem to them.'" So I don't know about you, but sometimes when I find myself in a fearful situation, my fears get bigger, my problems get bigger and bigger. And that's exactly what happened to these 10 spies. They looked at the people, and they started out about this big, and then they're this big, and then they're giants, and then all of a sudden, we look like grasshoppers in their eyes. Now, I don't like bugs. I actually hate bugs. So I'm going to just tell you a funny little story. And actually, it was good that you had Nate write those things, because it fits in really well. So when we were married, we've been married maybe 5 years, and I do not take care of bugs in my house. That is not my job, okay? That is my husband's job, and the fact that he only produced male children means that that is fine, because they can all take care of the bugs, and I don't have to. So there's this bug in our house, and it was like a grasshopper. It wasn't really, but it was big. It was about this big. And I called him. I said, "Nate, you have to take care of that bug," and he was kind of annoyed with me that I was asking him to come and take care of this. So he did. He grabbed a paper towel. He picked it up, and as he walked by, he squished it in my face. And it crunched. Like, it was crunchy. It was not like a little squishy thing. It was like a big, crunchy thing. But let me just say, if you're going to give your wife the nickname Princess, it is okay that she does not take care of bugs. Right? But see, that's the thing. As these 10 spies looked out at the people in the promised land, they're like, "That's what we look like. They could just pick us up and squish us." That's how big their problems had become. That's how big their fears had become in their life. And I remember, as you know, the flannel graph up here, you've got the 10 spies over here, and they're all dressed in dark, and their faces are sad and grumpy looking. And I always thought of them as kind of the bad guys in this story. Like, they come into Israel, or into the children of Israel, and they stir up fear and discontent. But you know what? I don't think they're the bad guys. You know what I think they are? They're human. They're you, and they are me. And as I stood at my crossroads, my problems were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I found myself, for the first time in my life, having panic attacks. And I'm sure in a room this size with women, there are some of you who have suffered from panic attacks. I had never suffered like that before. Here's how mine started. So we were 3 months. Justice had died 3 months ago. This is in April. And my husband had decided that he was going to go to a conference down in Florida. And I had decided I was not going to go. But he decided that he was not going to leave me at home alone to take care of children that when I was not coping well with life. And so he used his 51% of the vote in our relationship, which he's only done about 3 times in our marriage, really. And he said, "You're coming with me." And I said, "I am not." Because every night I went to bed, all I could think about was leaving my children alone and something happening to my kids. And then as I thought about that, all I could think about was getting on a plane. And when you've been on the losing side of a statistic, when you've lost a child, there is no reason in your mind that that plane has to land safely in Florida. And so every night when I close my eyes, I imagine that plane crashing, and every night I imagine my children being orphaned, as they'd already suffered so much. So my brain, my mind, my fears consumed me to the point where I could not imagine getting on that plane because I was so terrified of what would happen. Now again, I didn't have a choice in this because my husband made me go, and I did. And you know what? I am so thankful that I did, because you know what God had waiting for me in Florida? An incredible blessing that I would never have found if I had stayed here in Michigan. So we got down to Florida, and we were very kind of antisocial, really, because we were not able to talk to people. It was such a hard time in our life. And we really didn't talk to anyone until we were just about ready to leave. It was the last session, and we were going into the last session. And Nate ran into an old professor of his from Cornerstone, and he walked up to him, "Hey, Dr. Whitmer, how you doing?" And they started talking, and Dr. Whitmer had been talking to another man. And Dr. Whitmer kind of introduced us to this man who he had been talking to. His name was Mark Rogop, and he was also a pastor. And, you know, just kind of conversation that you have, and he asked a really simple question. He asked me, "How many kids do you have? How many kids do I have?" That's a really hard question to answer. And so instead of answering him, I just said, and burst into tears. That's what I did. And I'm sure I felt really bad for him because he didn't know what to do, right? I made a woman cry. How awful am I? My husband stepped in, and he was able to kind of just explain what happened. And Mark stopped, and he wrapped us in his arms, pulled us in close, and he said, 12 years ago, I stood right where you're standing right now. My wife gave birth to a stillborn daughter. Her name is Sylvia, and I know what you're going through, and if you need anything, you call me, you email me, you do whatever you need to do so that I can help you." 2 months later, Nate and I found ourselves sitting in their basement in Indianapolis, sitting across from Mark and Sarah, sharing our story as they spoke truth and life and light into our lives. Had I not gotten on the plane, not gone to Florida, I would have missed out on a blessing that God had waiting for me, just like the 10 spies missed out on the blessing of going into the promised land. They missed out, but not just because they missed out on the promised land. They missed out on an opportunity to be a blessing to other people. That's what God wanted them there for. They were to be a blessing to the people of the land. So when we allow our fears to consume us, we miss out on a blessing that God has. We can miss out on a blessing that God has for us, but we also miss out on an opportunity to be a blessing to other people. God is still good. God is still bigger than your giants. He's bigger than your problems. Jeremiah 32:27 says, "Behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is anything too hard for me?" I got to tell you a little bit about this part of the story because it's really amazing. Here Jeremiah is in Jerusalem, and he is surrounded by enemies, okay? The Chaldeans, the Babylonians, they have surrounded him. God comes to him and he says, "I want you to buy some land here in Jerusalem." And Jeremiah is like, you know the enemies out there, they're coming in. Why would I buy land? Because it's not going to be ours. And God says, "No, Jeremiah, you're coming back. You buy this land because I will bring you back. Nothing is too hard for our God. He is still bigger than the giants. He is bigger than your fears. He is bigger than your problems. And you can trust in him." Now, sometimes as you're going through life, we start to give in to those fears. And when we do that, sometimes we start to think that maybe God really isn't good. And I think this is where the children of Israel are after the 10 spies give their report. So the story goes on. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt." See, they bought into the fear that the 10 spies had shared with them. They bought into that fear, and as they bought into that fear, they started to think that God wasn't good. So feeding off the fear of the 10 spies, they began to blame God. See, they said, "God brought us here. He's going to leave us here, and he's not going to do anything for us. God is not good." So again, as I think through the stories, I've often thought that the children of Israel, man, why didn't they just walk into the promised land? It was right there. All they had to do was cross the Jordan River, right? If I had been where the children of Israel stood, of course I would have walked across the Jordan River into the promised land, right? I don't think so. Because you know what? They're not bad. They're human, like you and like me. And sometimes when we get to that place where we're afraid and we start to blame God for where we are, we can't see that God is good anymore. I was here, and Sarah, this is where I was telling you I'm going to talk about you tonight. So I remember this was maybe 3 weeks after Justice died. And again, it was a terrible winter. I think there was a snow day every other day. And three on Saturday. I mean, it was terrible, right? It was a terrible winter. But this particular snow day, and it was a snow day, it was a day when the kids didn't go to school, so they were all home. Everybody was home. And it had snowed all night long. And somehow in the morning, the sun came up. And it was a beautiful day. And Sarah sent me a text message, and she said to me, "Just wanted you to know that I'm praying for you. And I hope that you're able to get outside and enjoy this beautiful sunshine." And you know what? I was not ready to enjoy God's beautiful sunshine. In fact, I was kind of mad that God let the sun keep coming up. Because as the sun came up, I got further and further and further away from where I wanted to be, just like the children of Israel. They wanted to go back to how things used to be. I desperately wanted to go back to being pregnant again so that I could save my little boy's life. And I couldn't. The sun kept shining. The sun kept rising every day. And I had to come to the point where I realized that no matter what, no matter how bad my circumstances were, God is still good. And you know how he showed me that goodness? He showed me his goodness by giving me people like Sarah, who sent me text messages, reminding me that the sun does come up, because someday I was going to want to see that sunshine again. And I did. He also gave me people like you, so many of you. You were God's hands and you were God's feet. As you loved me and you loved my family, you brought me food. I did not cook a dinner for 3 months. That was God. You let God use you to show me his goodness, to show me that he was still good. My kids, if you can imagine what my home was like, it was not a happy place. It was a hard place. But you, Pam, I remember you brought my kids sledding. I think Scott, Andrew's not here, he took my kids snowmobiling. You spoke God's love into my life so that I could see that God was still good. Even though my circumstances were bad, you helped me see that God was still good. So Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that all for those that love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." See, I think we need to redefine what it means to be good. Because I think if we think that good means that everything's going to be wonderful and hunky-dory and sunshiny and wonderful all the time, we will be disappointed. But if good is not determined by what happens to you, listen, Good. God is good not because of what happens to you. God's goodness is determined by what is happening in you, not to you. And if we can grasp that, it will change the way we see things so dramatically. And ultimately, if as a result of our suffering, we are just a little tiny bit more like God, if I am more compassionate, if I am more gracious, if I am more kind, if I am more generous because I've suffered, then somehow in God's bigness, remember, he's a big God, in his bigness, we see God's goodness not in spite of our suffering, but through it. And that's my prayer for us tonight. So one last point here. So if God really is good, or if God really is big enough to handle our problems, our giants, if you will, and he really is good still, he's still good. If he is those things, then why am I here? Like, why am I here? Is God really in control? I mean, does he have it? Does he have my back? Because I think sometimes we ask ourselves these questions as we face a crossroad, as we are standing at a point where we have to decide what we really believe about God. See, the next people in our story, Caleb and Joshua, I think they can help us learn a little bit about that. So this is Numbers 14, verse 5, if you want to follow along. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all of the assembly and of the congregation of the people of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, "The land which we pass through to spy it out is exceedingly good. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread to us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Then all the congregation said to stone them with stones, but the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of the meeting to all the people of Israel. See, Caleb and Joshua, they stood at the exact same spot as the 10 spies. Their crossroad was exactly the same. They saw the same land. They saw the same people. They had heard all the same messages. They were in Egypt. They saw the 10 plagues. They were at the Red Sea when God parted the waters. The difference between Caleb and Joshua and the 10 spies is that they believed God. That was the main difference. See, they did all the right things. And I think sometimes in our stories, we want to relate to the people who do all the right things, right? We want to be the Caleb and Joshuas. But sometimes you can do all the right things. You can be following God's plan. Nate and I, we were following God's plan. I know God called us here. We are exactly where God wants us to be. And yet, Caleb and Joshua, they did all the right things. They spoke truth into the lives of these people. They said, "Please don't do this thing. We can trust God. We can." But the people didn't listen to them. And you know what happens. You know what happens in the story. They spend 40 years wandering in the wilderness. So Caleb and Joshua get a free pass, and they get to go into the promised land and don't have to wander for 40 years, right? That's not how it worked. They did all the right things, and they still wandered for 40 years. They still wandered for 40 years. So just because you do the right things, just because you have the right view of God, doesn't mean that everything's going to be easy for you. So Caleb and Joshua, I don't know what those 40 years were like for them. I can only imagine it was very hard for them not to pull out their "I told you so" card or the "why didn't you listen to me" card. Because if it were me, that's where I would have been. Because I've been there with my husband a couple times. "I told you. Why didn't you?" But I don't think they did that. You know what I think they did? I think they walked in faith day after day after day, not knowing what each step was going to look like, but knowing in the end that God was in control. God is still in control. So Colossians 1:17 said, says, "And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together." This is one of my all-time favorite verses, because sometimes I'm a little bit of a control freak in some areas of my life. I like to make sure that everything is all packaged up and nice and neatly, and, you know, everything is holding together. But life is messy, and it is not always holding together. Things feel like they're falling apart. But if you know that God is holding it together, he's holding the universe together, he is holding everything together, God's got it. He has it completely under control. You know what that does for me? It frees me up to stop worrying about next year, next month, next decade. I don't have to worry about that. All I have to do is think about doing the next right thing, like Caleb and Joshua, as they walked for 40 years in the wilderness. And this is not something that I came up with on my own. I'm going to do a shameless plug here for a program that I really believe in. So it was coming up to about the one-year anniversary of when Justice died, and I was a mess. It might not have looked like it to you, because, again, I like to look like I'm holding it together. But I was a wreck. I was really struggling with the reality that this is forever. I can't go back to how I am a different person, and I was really struggling with that. And so I don't know if you know who Matt and Holly Kleifkin are, but they brought a program into our church called Grief Share. And for some people, it's hard to admit that you need help with something, and so I'm one of those people. Like, I like to do things on my own, but because things were so hard for me at this point, I signed up for Grief Share, and it was the best thing that I've ever done in terms of healing and learning how to continue in this journey of grief. And so again, here's my shameless plug. I know Matt and Holly are planning on running this program again. If you or anyone that you know is suffering through this journey of grief, please sign up for it. Don't be too proud. It is the best thing that you will do for yourself. It is the best thing that you will do for somebody else as they are learning how to find their new normal. So this idea of doing the next right thing, that's something that I learned directly through Grief Share. You don't have to worry about tomorrow, the next day, next year. You just do the next right thing, whatever that is. I don't know your story. I don't know what crossroad you're standing at. I don't know what God is doing in your life. But you do. And as you have thought about your journey tonight, my hope is that you did not hear about me tonight, because this is not about me. My hope is that you heard about God, and you heard about a God who is big enough, no matter how big your giants are, because they're big. Some of our giants are enormous. But you heard about a God who is big enough to handle those giants, so you can trust in his bigness. And I hope that you heard about a God who, no matter how hard your circumstances are, and believe me, I know, they can be hard. They can be life-shattering, earth-shattering hard. But our God is still good, so you can rest in his goodness. And I hope that you heard about a God who, no matter how uncertain your future looks, and as you ask that question, why am I here? Why? You know that our God is still in control, so you can do the next right thing. Let me pray for you tonight. Dear Heavenly Father, God, I thank you so much for these women coming here tonight, Lord, and allowing me to share my story with them. Lord, I pray that the women here will hear not me, they will hear you, and that they will know, God, that you are big and you are good and you are in control. And Lord, I pray that as we leave here tonight, we will learn to trust in you and rest in you and walk in faith. Lord, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for what you've done. And Lord, I thank you for what you will continue to do in our lives. Amen.